Hello everyone, my name is Jacob Meg. I am the host of the Behavioral Health Integration Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Dr. Alan Stephen Leica, who was acknowledged as one of the leading cosmetic dermatologists in the world for 3 decades. He has lived and practiced in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada since 1989. He's also written 17 books, 30 plus academic papers, and hosted the number one internet radio show in the world, Inside Cosmetic Surgery Today.
Dr. Leica, thank you so much for being on my podcast. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jacob, for having me. It's really my pleasure for being here. It's always a pleasure to spread my word and get a chance to communicate with another audience.
Well, and again, too, I love hearing about people's passions and journeys. And when I came across yours, I just became very interested and excited. And I know I'm going to benefit from it as well as my BHI listeners.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for having me. And it's an honor and a privilege to serve your audience.
Well, thank you. Now, again, right off the bat, you know, what originally got you into medicine? Was it something that you kind of picked up like in junior high school, kind of like where you gained the interest?
You know, I was a firstborn child, and I think firstborn children always have a passion to serve other people. So I really started on that pathway of serving. And it was probably in my pre-medicine days that I got this passion. You know, I did a BSc honors in psychology and a BA general. And then during that phase, I just decided I was going to go for it. Now, medicine was highly competitive then as it is now. So it took a couple of years to get in. I mean, I remember the pile of applications on the floors of my house, how many we had to put through to get through. And finally, I got accepted by the University of Alberta and the University of Calgary. I was living in Calgary at that time, but I chose the University of Alberta because it was a bigger medical school. Mm-hmm. And I felt that it would give me a bigger toe in for anything else that I wanted to do. The University of Alberta was more accepted as well because it had a longer history, a longer reputation. And so I was glad I went there, and that was history. When I went through medicine, my passion became to go into dermatology. Okay. And dermatology was even more competitive than getting into medicine. You know, there were only a handful of spots in Canada at that time. And so I started to apply across the United States. And I was invited to interview at the University of Minnesota. And that's nice. Where I was accepted. So I went there from 86 to 89, which was a real big benefit for me because the American dermatology schools were much more advanced than the Canadian dermatology schools. They were much more into technology. And for example, they were using lasers and they were using other things that the Canadian schools were not using yet. So it really put me years ahead of when I came back to Canada in my chosen field. And I really was able to command the field and get up at the top of it. And it was an exciting go. You know, things were being invented back then that were just brand new. Botox was being invented, just had been invented for treating wrinkles, for example. Mm-hmm. Other wrinkle filling materials were just invented called collagen. And then soon after, there were a lot of other fillers to help with facial atrophy and things like that. Lasers were at their beginning then, and now they're a main tool that's used by everybody around the world. So it was nice to get in at the forefront of everything before everybody else got it. And my training was able to do that. And it also gave me a firm basis in skin diseases. And as you know, the skin is the largest organ of the body. So it interfaces with everything. Once I became good at that, I was able to do a lot. And I had some superb teaching from my mentors and was able to command the field.
Just curious, did your mindset ever change when it came to like before you went into med school to like after, where it's like, oh my God, I didn't think medicine was like this in a particular way.
You know, I think when you're looking at things at the start, you have no concept unless you have a medical family or things like that. And I had no medical family. So it was really an awakening along the way. You know, for me, medicine was a lot of work when I was at the University of Alberta. I did my 4 years of medicine. Then I did internal medicine. Mm-hmm. And internal medicine was really a difficult thing. We were on call a lot. We worked a lot. But we were able to know all diseases by the time we stopped. So the answer is, it really gave me a firm background for getting into dermatology and gave me an extremely good work ethic for able to command it. You know, a doctor has to be passionate about this. Yeah. It's not a Monday through Friday thing. It's a 24-hour thing for the rest of your life. So you better love it because it's going to be your passion.
Now, when a med student goes through, let's say, like residency, do you think there's kind of like there's flaws in this type of system where I've heard sometimes like med students and residents would have to like work 3-4 hours a day and it would increase the chance of burnout, stress? Like, again, do you think that's more of a flaw to the system? And is there like better ways we could do that to, again, help our residents out?
I went through, you know, when I went through, there was no such thing as burnout. You used to just do it. I mean, we'd be on call, we'd be working 24 hours, and then we'd change over to another group of people. So we'd have morning rounds. So you'd be on 30 hours on and then 12 hours off. Wow. So really, to us, burnout was not a thing. It was just, you know, you just accepted it. It was something that you signed up, you wanted to be a doctor, you're going to be a doctor. And that's what it took to be a doctor. You know, I think these things about burnout are more in people's minds than anything else. Mm-hmm. And I think it really, if you want to be a good doctor, you have to accept it. We had a bad joke and it was this: what's bad about being on call every second night? And it was, you miss half the interesting cases. Mm-hmm. So the answer is, you know, you accepted it, you did it. Yes, you were tired, but, you know, being tired was part of the game, and part of it was that you learned to think on your feet no matter what the situation was. You know, if you're a soldier in a war zone, you're not going to talk about burnout. You're not going to be talking about the enemy's bullets coming at you and complaining about it. You're going to arise above the occasion so that you're going to survive. And that's what we did. We survived and we thrived based on what we were doing.
Also, could you compare it to kind of like the military, where you kind of had your community, your platoon, your camaraderie as med students together? Do you think that also helped you guys get through?
Oh, for sure. You know, we had some real good friends, and I still have those good friends now, 30 years later. So the very fact that we worked together and did everything together, it really helped us a lot. And we learned to appreciate what was going on. You know?
Absolutely. That's a beautiful thing. It really is. Now, like fast forward to the present moment. Now, would you say that there are some areas that medicine can improve, especially when it comes to like client care?
You know, I think the biggest problem with medicine now is the insurance companies that are controlling it. You know, I think the problem is doctors aren't allowed to practice medicine as they want to. It's all an economic venture. You know, on my side of the border, it's run, you know, we have group insurance, you know, where people are all covered from birth to grave, but doctors are working so hard, they literally can't treat their patients in a way that's going to allow them both economic freedom and help their patients along. You know, if it's not diagnosed in 4 minutes, you're probably not going to be able to help them. So it's that goes on this on your side of the border as well. You know, all these insurance companies are productive at the most, and so you have to realize those are the difficulties of the systems and limitations of the systems.
Now, in Canada, you guys have the universal health care. Does that make anything easier or harder for you when it comes to that realm?
No, if you have a heart attack, you're not going to lose your house. You're not going to lose your well-being. You're not going to lose all the things you stand for. So if you have a major medical illness, you're going to be taken care of. The difficulty is if you have a chronic illness and need a hip replacement or a knee replacement, you can be on the waiting list for 2 to 3 years before it's done. So, you know, all systems have their flaws. Your flaw in your system, if you have more money, you're going to get things done. If you don't have money, you're not going to get things done. So every system has its flaws.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in the therapy world, we experience the same issues when it comes to insurance companies, billing for sessions and whatnot. You know, it also seems kind of like, you know, the better insurance you have, like the more therapy sessions you can have, where if you have something like MA, you don't get as much like sessions, which is like ironic because like it usually goes on the poverty line where you're getting, you qualify for something like MA and whatnot. But I feel like that's generally the population that needs therapy or other health services the most.
So. Well, the sad thing about all systems is it's usually the poor people that need the most treatment. And, you know, that will be no matter what. I mean, because of poor nutrition, because of other issues that they have, it'll always be that they require more resources. I don't care what country you live in. I don't care where you work. That's the same of everywhere. You know, I was fortunate to be such a good doctor. I was able to travel around the world and see other systems. And I did some work in Egypt, for example, at the military hospitals there. So at the military hospitals, when I was coming, they'd announce it to the people in the community and allow people from the community to come in. So, but again, the very poor people needed the help the most, and they don't get any, even in those countries. So the answer is it's always a drain on the system that way. And it'll be that way forever.
Oh, yeah, I hear horror stories about, like, some of those people are in other regions, even Africa. They're walking miles and miles just to maybe see a doctor.
Absolutely. You know, when I was in Egypt, we'd get people all the way from, you know, from other countries around, but because they heard this doctor from Canada was coming that might be able to help them. So we were able to see people, you know, all over. And, you know, it was beautiful. I'd be there, I'd do a lot of good, but unfortunately, it was very much like a patchwork quilt.
I see. Well, I want to get into a little bit of a different direction now. And again, as we all know, you have a very special and unique story. And I was wondering if you could elaborate with me and my listeners on the misdiagnosis you actually got. That
I'd be delighted to. I'd be delighted to, Jacob. You know, I was in 2003, I was walking with my wife in Disney World, and she turned to me and said, "What's wrong with you, hon?" And I said, "I really don't know what you're talking about." Well, she said, "What's wrong with you?" Well, my right foot had suddenly and mysteriously developed a right foot drop. You know, Jacob, your foot is designed to lift up with each step that you're taking. And with each step you're taking, your foot lifts up and gives you you know, allows you not to fall flat on your face. Yeah. Well, my foot wasn't doing that. It was flapping on the pavement with each step I was taking. My wife said, "Did you have a stroke?" And I said, "Dear, if I had a stroke, you know that I'd be probably lying on the pavement saying something unintelligible. You know, that's not how strokes present." And she said, "Well, when you get back, you better get this checked out." Well, Jacob, when your wife says you better get it checked out, what do?
You better do it.
You better do it. That's right. So I ended up seeing dozens of doctors, And they referred me to more doctors and more doctors and more doctors. And, you know, they did probably every test they knew at that time. They did CAT scans. They did brain scans. They even did scan scans, you know. And you know what they showed at the end of the day?
What?
Absolutely nothing.
Oh, God.
You know, the doctors were befuddled and flabbergasted because, you know, they thought there was a brain tumor. They thought there was something there that would give them an answer, but they couldn't find anything. So they decided to send me to a neurologist. A neurologist is the brain doctor. He's supposed to have all the answers to all these crazy neurological problems. Well, they did. And I saw this world-leading authority. And I walked in and I said, hi. And he said, hi back. He said, you better be sitting down when I tell you this. And I said, why? I just have a dropped right foot. He said, no, you don't. You have ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. Oh. You better get your affairs in order. You're going to be dead in 6 months. You know, Jacob, I was taken aback. I didn't know what to say. But I asked him, is there a way to prove this diagnosis? And he said, of course, on autopsy.
Oh.
Of course, this guy had no bedside manner.
Sounds like it.
But, you know, I went out of his office. I slammed the door and I said, I'm not going to die to prove you wrong. But you know, when you go through something like this, Jacob, you go through trauma.
Yes.
Literally being told you're going to die. So you go through the phases of death and dying that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote in her book on death and dying. And you know, their anger, you become very angry at the world. I was angry at my wife. I was angry at my children. I was angry at everything in my world. And I couldn't tell people what was going on. Otherwise, they might abandon me, you know. So you go through a phase of bargaining, you know, oh, God, please don't let this happen. I'll do anything if you don't let this happen. You go through denial, you know, there's nothing wrong. I can do anything. There's really nothing wrong in my life. But, you know, my right hand started not working right either. I couldn't grasp the surgical instruments like I used to. And so, you know, I was smart. I was able to adapt and become a left-handed surgeon from being a right-handed surgeon. And, you know, I was able to keep on going as a result. But then you go through depression. Jacob, have you ever been depressed?
From here, from time to time, of course, like the blues and
You know, when you get really depressed, it's the worst thing in the world. You can't sleep. You can't eat. You stay in bed all day long, staring at the ceiling, because what's the point? You have nothing to live for. You've lost your purpose in life. And, you know, I've seen people die from ALS. So it's one of the worst things in the world. People end up gasping for air, and it's just a terrible disease as this disease eats them. So I had planned to kill myself. But, you know, before I did that, I went to my wife and I said, dear, what do I have? And she said, you know, I haven't got the faintest idea, but you're smart. You'll figure it out. I said, dear, I'm at my wit's end. I've seen hundreds of doctors. Yeah. They couldn't give me an answer. Her answer was, perhaps you haven't seen the right doctor yet. And, you know, this is what you have to realize is doctors have their own limited set of skills and their own limited beliefs, and they can't see outside their own box. So she was right. And back in the early 2000s, something new was invented. You might have heard about it. It's called the internet.
Amen.
And, you know, the beautiful thing about the internet is it's much like it is now, but it was very primitive back then. You only could get on by dial-on connections back then.
Yep.
So you had to put your phone on a cradle, and it would go, for something like 15 minutes. And finally, you'd connect to the other side. But you could only communicate by languages like DOS, because there was no memory in computers. You couldn't do the things now. We didn't have Dr. Google. We didn't have Dr. Yahoo. We didn't have the search engines we do now. what we had. So I got on with the Friends of My Nerds, and we were able to get on to search the web. And I found a doctor in Colorado Springs, Colorado, by the name of David Martz, that had a story very similar to mine, but he got worse much more rapidly. And he was on his deathbed within weeks of his diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was fascinating. David was so well loved by his colleagues that people from around the world were coming up to see him and say goodbye to him. Wow. And a doctor came up from Texas and looked at David and said, David, I don't think you have ALS. I don't think you have Lou Gehrig's disease. I think you have chronic Lyme's disease. Wow. I think you've been bitten by a tick and it's mimicking ALS. And I think if I start you on treatment, he said, I think I can make you better. And there a miracle happened. Within 2 weeks, David was back to his usual self.
Wow.
So I knew I had to get in touch with David. And I got in touch with him at the Methodist Hospital in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And there we talked for hours. And he told me he had started a clinic called the Rocky Mountain Chronic Disease Clinic to treat people with this weird disease. And he said he's been able to get over 2,000 people treated and do well. So, you know, he invited me to come down and see him. And I said, when would you like to see me? He said, what about right now? I said, David, it's Thanksgiving in Canada. I can't come down. My wife's invited people over. He said, aren't there any planes in Canada?
You're serious?
Yes, you're serious. So I talked to my wife. I apologized, saying I'm not going to be there. And she said, where are you going this time? You know, you always seem to be away. And I said, well, I'm going to Colorado Springs. There's a doctor that claims he can help me. And she said, well, let me pack your bags for you. Let me drive you to the airport. I'll take care of the 50 people. There's nothing wrong there, you know. Mm-hmm. So she drove me to the airport. I got on a plane from Edmonton to Denver, which is a great flight, about 2.5 hours long.
Okay.
And then I got on a plane from Denver to Colorado Springs. It was a rinky-dink puddle jumper. Have you ever been on a rinky-dink puddle jumper?
I have not. I have not had the pleasure.
Well, I think you'd be glad that you weren't on this one, because what happens is the air comes off the desert at the end of the day. And it causes eddies, which causes turbulence. And the plane will be flying around and then all of a sudden drop 100 feet. Oh. It will climb back to its height and then drop 200 feet. It'll climb back to its height and then drop 300 feet. So it's like the drop of doom at Disneyland over again. So it's a 15-minute flight, but it's the flight from hell.
Yeah.
And when you get off, you literally climb off. You're green, as every passenger is. And, you know, when I did, I climbed off, and there was David on the tarmac to meet me. It was just beautiful that he was there. And he said, let's go talk. And we talked, for hours. And he said, Dr. Leica, I think history is repeating itself. I think I can start you on treatment and make you better. And so I was able to continue as a top cosmetic surgeon until 2019, when I walked away to help other people in other ways.
So what was the time frame from when you first got diagnosed with ALS till that moment right there? How long has it been, or was it?
You know, I was diagnosed with ALS in the early 2000s, so probably about 2005.
Okay.
So I'm still going now and doing well now. So what can I say? It's been an amazing existence. And you know, that very bout with ALS allowed me to reshape my life, reconnect with others, and be able to serve others in more ways than I would have otherwise. You know, because of that, I was able to start giving back to society. And one of the things I started to do was to sponsor a group called the YWCA, and they used to run a Women of Distinction banquet. Mm-hmm. And I was the main sponsor for it. And because of that, a beautiful lady by the name of Harriet Tinka applied for an award called the Turning Point Award. Now, Harriet had a story very similar to mine, but even different. She was a wonderful, marvelous model, walking the cat ropes of New York and Milan and Italy and Paris. And she grew tired of the industry because it's such a dog-eat-dog industry. Yeah. She decided to take up her second love, which was accounting. So she went to the University of Calgary to become an accountant. And there she was befriended by a person that was a psychopath, so evil that he ended up being obsessed with her. He ended up kidnapping her and stabbing her and leaving her for dead. Now, Harriet ended up in the hospital. She doesn't know how, but there she met a wonderful little girl by the name of Amanda. And Amanda literally changed Harriet's life. See, Harriet was really beside herself. She was downtrodden. She was going through post-traumatic stress, mm-hmm. and she couldn't do anything. And this girl called Amanda was in a car accident where she lost both of her parents and use of her legs during the car accident. But she looked at Harriet and said, "Harriet, what are you doing?" She said, "I'm going to make something out of my life." She says, "I challenge you to empower other people in doing so." So Harriet had applied for the award, not to get the award, but to meet me. And she encouraged me to write a book with her. And so we wrote the book called The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life, which was published in early 2020, just at the start of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And it became an international bestseller. And that led me to do a podcast, which led me to do a syndicated radio show, which now, as I told you before the show, has about 3 million listeners a month.
Wow. That's amazing. That really is. And I also see, too, you offer a coaching service as well.
You know, yes, I do. And I love to coach people on an individual and a group basis. And you can find out more of my services on Coaching with Dr. Lyka. That's Coaching with DRLYCKA.com. And I actually offer a free 15-minute call with anybody. It's called a discovery call, in which we can help you to get all your affairs in order. So, you know, my services generally run $1,000 an hour. So take advantage of that. This is something I love to offer people, and it's something that I do free for them.
You know, Dr. Lyka, I'm just curious, when you work with your clients in the service, obviously you can't give us too much information, but what are like the main issues do you find people like suffering through every day? Is it like anxiety, depression, existentialism, work issues, et cetera?
The answer is it's all of the above.
Yeah.
People come to me and their problems are just as individual as they are, you know, and each one has their own set of problems that need to be addressed and need people to get out of that. I mean, a person can be really, really successful just like you are, and yet they could have some issues with their jobs or their careers or with things that they didn't deal with well in childhood.
Yeah.
So it's something that I think people could very well do. Everybody needs a coach, Jacob. Mm-hmm. I think a large part of where I am today is because coaching I've had throughout my career. You know, as when I was a medical doctor, I had doctors that mentored me. When I was going through other parts of my business and so on, I had entrepreneurial doctors that trained me. And so it's always been an ongoing process of helping people helping me along the way. Now, you can do it all yourself, but then you have to learn from your mistakes along the way, which is always the most difficult thing. the school of hard knocks is the most difficult teacher because it gives the test before the lesson. Mm-hmm. And I always expect people to do it the easy way if they can. And, you know, right now I'm actually looking for a couple of people that might want to get some coaching on air on my show so I can show people how I coach. And I'd love to be able to offer that to a couple of people. So if people would go to that coaching with Dr. Leica, we could set something up and we could therefore give you a half hour of free coaching on air. And again, that can be anonymous if you like, so that everything that is there will just help you along.
Oh, and I'll definitely make sure I put those links on my show notes for all my listeners as well. Yeah, and also, do you believe in the mentality too, like you learn a lot more from losing in certain areas than you do winning?
You know, it's unfortunate in life that some of our greatest teachers are losing, you know. Mm-hmm. Some of our greatest teachers are when we fall flat on our ass and get up and pick ourselves up and dust ourselves off and go on to the next thing. I think that's one of the greatest things. But at the same time, you'll never know the heights of exaltation unless you know the depths of despair. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll never know those things. And I also firmly believe it's not what happens to you. It's what you do with what happens. That's very important to realize, that by doing and by doing things, getting yourself going, moving yourself forward, it's very important. Mm-hmm. Now, fear should not keep you captive in that. You know, 95% of the things we fear never really happen. And the 5% of things we fear are always less than we ever thought they would be. So it's important to realize that overcoming those situations is more important than anything else. And as I say, it's not what happens to you. It's what you do with what happens.
Well, and really it's the concept of like failure, because again, people are again afraid to try because they fail. I sometimes view it as failure is just not trying in general. If you try and fail, that's fine, but at least try.
I think that's true, Jacob. And I, you know, remember it was Henry Ford that once said that if you think you can or you think you can't, you're absolutely right. You know, and that I think is true. A lot of this has to do with mindset. A lot of this has to do with the things that you are trying to do in your life, but your mindset is preventing you from moving forward.
Well, now that we're winding down, Dr. Leica, I just have to ask you again, you've accomplished so much, but down the road, is there any other projects you feel passionate about that you would like to get into?
I love what I'm, you know, doing a syndicated radio show is really one of the greatest things. But, you know, that's only a start for many of the things that I'd be doing. Now that I've gotten this, people are approaching me with other projects.
Yeah.
Like two television stations have approached me with television shows now. So I'm looking at that as something to do. I'm looking at starting a private group for people as well, so people can be part of that private network as well. I'm looking at other opportunities so I can serve people more and help them more. I'm also a speaker and go to various groups and speak. So the answer is I would love to be on more stages come fall and help people there. I think all of these things are the way I can serve people better and help people along the way and help them with my message and help them with the things that I'm doing. When you get to the phase I'm at, you ask the question, how can I be of greatest service for people? You know, in my life, I've written 17 books as a doctor and three best-selling books since that time. So I'll probably start seminars to help doctors with that as well. I'll also start seminars for some retreats for people to come to And in 7 days, we'll be able to help them turn around whatever's going on in their life and make them get to a better level as well. So all these things are works in progress. I look at my to-do list and there is quite a bit of things I need to do. But, you know, I look at my done list and it's been quite amazing as well. My accomplished list is quite amazing. So, you know, each day I take a baby step forward and try to make it happen.
And also, if my listeners want to get a hold of your books, where could they find and purchase them?
You know, they are on Amazon. That's probably okay. The easiest way. I find the beautiful thing about Amazon is you can access it from around the world, and it's printed in your neighborhood. So the answer is you don't have to wait for delays or anything like that. So it comes straight to you. So I think that is the easiest way to do it. There is also a link on my website that you can do it through there as well. Again, it's, we love to be able to help where we can.
And also, Dr. Leica, if any of my listeners want to contact and communicate with you, is there a particular website or email address they could use?
You know, my best place is to go to my website, Dr. Allen Leica. That's Dr. Allen Leica, LYCKA.com. And that is the best place. Or you can write my personal assistant, Tammy, T-A-M-I, at Leica, LYCKA.ca.
Excellent. And I will make sure I put those links on my show notes for all my listeners. Well, again, Dr. Leica, it was an amazing pleasure hearing your story, listening to you, learning from you. It was an honor. Thank you so much.
Well, Jacob, it's always an honor to talk to another person about my story and help other people along. I really hope your listeners learn some of the things, some of the golden pearls I teach. In my book, there's 13 golden pearls I use as cornerstones for people. And I encourage people to pick that up and look at it because there's a lot of wisdom in there that people can take it. And I guarantee that if you follow the teachings in it, you'll change your life around. And in the very soon, I've just recorded a course that will be online so that people can follow some principles in that as well, so that people will get that. So I am a very, you know, I'm retired, but I'm probably busier now than I've ever been.
Definitely. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Bye for now.
I just want to thank Dr. Leica and all my BHI listeners for another wonderful episode. Again, I just want to express that the content that was informed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a medical doctor or a licensed mental health professional. All right, thank you and have a good day. Bye.